Back together again, you and I chatting it up round the wireless Thursday, January 16th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. We kicked off the show with news that a bill to outlaw the sales of nip bottles of alcohol in Connecticut has been introduced in the General Assembly. What happens to it is in doubt now. State Senate Republican leader Steve Harding dropped by to explain this week's disclosure of an extra $340 million of revenue in state coffers. CBS News correspondent Aaron Navarro was here with the latest on the Trump transition, and Washington Times online opinion editor and author of the new book God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths, Cheryl Chumley, talked about the growing trend of using executive orders by both parties to govern.
So I want to revive a discussion we've had on and off here for a couple, three shows maybe over the past year. And the reason I'm reviving it is because I want to show you another I told you so on it. Because apparently I'm not the only one that thinks this about those. And last night as synchronicity would have it on this topic. Last night, I stopped at one of the local big-name supermarkets on my way home, wanted to pick up a few things, whatever, yada, yada, yada. Went in, got what I needed, some bread, some frozen stuff. You know, you got some grapes, love grapes. Got to cut down on my grapes. I'll eat the whole damn 2 pounds. But having said that, green, red, whatever. Got back in the car, and I looked to my left as I was backing out of the parking space. And I see to my left in the parking space, either right next to me or the space over from that, one or two spaces over from that to the left side, I see crunched down, obviously, from somebody's tires on some vehicle, four or five nip bottles. You know what we're talking about? The plastic bottles that are sold by liquor stores, package stores, whatever you want to call them, packies, liquor stores, whatever. And we've had a debate on these things. And I have always, not always, but I've come to the notion that we need to take a fresh look at nips. Now, having said that, I know there are probably still, as I expel that last breath by saying that, there are people now still screaming at me, hey, you know, nips aren't the problem, this and the other. Okay, I get that. You're not happy, some of you, when I say this. But, you know, I looked down and I saw those bottles and I said, well, geez, they're right about in a parking space where somebody's car door was. So is it a stretch for me to sit here at night on a Wednesday night, you know, last night with the chilly wind blowing in my face, and saying, yeah, somebody downed maybe two or three, you know, all three or four of those or two of them, whatever, and just, you know, drove away. Now, I know. You can go to a bar and get just as drunk and get in a car and be a hazard to yourself and society on the way home. I get that. You can pop two or three THC gummies and be a hazard. I get that. You can smoke a nice fat Rastafarian doobie there in your car and be a hazard. I get that. Believe me, alcohol isn't the only thing. I understand that. And there are other ways to imbibe alcohol in drinks and takeout drinks now from restaurants with that seal after the COVID-19, the coronavirus time that we went through there. But do these bottles, these nip bottles, do they make it easier? You know, in the pandemic, we were watching for all this stuff. Hey, people still have to be allowed to buy alcohol and whatever. And the COVID-19 scenario gave us the sealed drinks on the way home. People still use nips. I get it. I understand it. So I look down at the ground and I say, oh, geez, there you go. And so I started thinking about it on the way home, saying, well, you know, should I bring this up or not? Again. And I am bringing it up because, believe it or not, and it's not that shocking of a thing. Now, there may be a proposal that at least is going to get a look-see in Hartford, as I have told you. Something that may get a look-see in Hartford to say, hey, should we at least look at banning nip sales or severely curtailing them. And I told you that would happen. Because what I think has happened here is that people have heard so much about these NIPs and about the tens and hundreds of thousands of these things that are consumed in the state. And we know that now because state officials put that out every month or every couple of months. Hey, because, you know, there's a deposit now on these NIP models. You see them all over the place. And people, thankfully, trying to keep the environment clean, you know, they pick up the NIP bottles and then they bring them in. And then by some formula, individual cities and towns are allowed to recoup some of that money for environmental use. I think it has to specifically be geared towards something environmental. Well, you know what's happening here now? And I kind of predicted this. People see these numbers of NIP bottles, and they see them in these articles that in and of themselves are, you know, pretty sanguine articles. Hey, just want to let you know that state officials tell us at Hearst or at News 8 or at the Hartford Current or News 12 or whatever, Channel 3 or Channel 30. Hey, last month we had how many thousands of NIP bottles turned in, and that money is going to bounce back to the cities and towns, and it's all going to be wonderful. Herb tea, rub your feet, kumbaya, and all that, because it will be used now for environmental aspects of programs in these cities or towns. But what's happening here, though, is you see people say, wait a minute, that, huh? How many thousand NIPs were sold last year? And now these numbers have now sprouted, if you will, a scenario where a lot of people are saying, hey, like I did a few months ago, really? All these NIPs? There's something wrong with that. And we talk once again about NIPs. Yes, those little bottles of booze, whatever it is, brandy, whiskey, vodka, whatever. I don't drink. I drink maybe one or two drinks a year to be social, and that's it. But the reason we're bringing this up is apparently now at least one constituent of a state legislator has perhaps convinced that legislator to introduce a bill to ban or restrict the sale of NIPs here in Connecticut. Now, again, don't start screaming at me. Don't kill the messenger here. It's just me. According to the Connecticut Insider, the Hearst media site here, Ken Dixon, who's been on the show here before, says a constituent of State Rep. Jamie Foster, Democrat Ellington, thinks that even with the funding for the environment, continued sales of NIPs promote drinking and driving at a time when more than 300 people died in car crashes in 2024. Foster telling Hearst in a phone interview that during the fall campaign, people in her district voiced concern about road safety, so the lawmaker proposed a statewide ban on NIPs. I told you somebody was going to do this. Foster telling Hearst, quote, it's my role as a legislator to bring proposals with merit for consideration. She said, quote, my job is to move a bill through the system. Now, the proposal to ban NIPs statewide has been referred to the Legislative General Law Committee. Now, there are several steps that would have to happen here. That's where leaders will decide whether it even gets a public hearing and eventual vote. Now, this comes after, as Ken points out here, last year, where there was a proposal that failed that would have allowed cities and towns to enact their own NIP bans. And there are states that do that. I think Massachusetts is one. I think Arizona and New Mexico say, well, you know what, let's leave it up to cities and towns. Now, of course, that's logistically, that can be a pain in the arse, too, because if, you know, liquor store or package store A, which is right on a town or city line, doesn't sell NIPs, somebody's going to set up a store 20 feet over the town or city line in the next municipality and say, hey, buy your NIPs here. But to my point, before we go to the phones here, the question is, would you at least like to have a debate? And again, if you're angry at this, if you're a liquor store owner, a package store owner, feel free. I want to hear from you on this. 203-333-9422. 333 WICC. What do you think of this? One state rep, Democrat Jamie Foster of Ellington. People in her district voiced concerns about road safety, so the lawmaker statewide is proposing a statewide ban on NIPS. I told you this would happen. Because people are seeing these things everywhere. And you look at these numbers here. Again, this is Ken Dixon's story from Today in Hearst. Each year, here it is. Here's the number. It's startling. 94 million NIPS sold in Connecticut each year. 94 million. It's a lot of booze. Is that a safety hazard on the highway? Now, yes, they're small. I understand it. A NIP is basically a shot. But 94 million shots of the, or NIPS, are sold on a, according to this story, on a yearly basis here. Is that irresponsible? And again, with all due deference to liquor store owners, package store owners, I get it. Listen, I if something is legal in the state and you're a legally operating business, you should partake in it. Not saying you shouldn't. But I can understand the concern here when, you know, apparently you have the constituents here of State Rep Jamie Foster, Democrat Ellington, that I guess she heard in the fall campaign, people talking about road safety. So she's proposing a statewide ban on NIPS. Agree with that? Disagree? If it's not a statewide ban, a blanket ban statewide, should individual cities and towns be able to say, yeah, in our city or town, it's okay. We're okay with the package stores, the liquor stores, the wine shops selling NIPS. Or should they be able to say, not here? Just the way a lot of cities and towns have said no marijuana shops here. Go over the next line and buy it, right? Or is this unfair to liquor retailers? Jose in Shelton. Jose, what's up with you, sir? Good afternoon.
Hey, what's up, Paul?
Yeah.
Paul, if you're not attacking Dems, you want to ban NIPS? No, let the people decide.
Well, see, but again,
I told you last time my NIPS story when I was in high school, right?
Yeah, you did. You did. You got lucky because
women love NIPS.
Women love NIPS. Say, wait a minute. You're a Democrat. You're not supposed to talk that way.
95% of women, I think 95% of users that buy NIPS are women.
Where are we going with
this? They can put them in their little pocket with their hand. They can take a shot.
What the hell are you talking about?
NIPS are consumed by 95% of NIP consumers are women.
Oh, wait a minute. Where are you coming up? Wait a minute.
They go out on a date.
Where are you coming up with that number?
I did my own research. I told you what happened when I was.
Yeah, we don't need to get the details again.
Well, when I was at your town 2 months ago when I went to a show at
The Oakdale,
The parking lot was littered with NIPS.
That's what I mean.
See, what happens is they don't return them.
Well, yeah.
They just throw them out. But guess who gets all that money?
Well, the cities
in Connecticut.
Yes, but Jose, is that not a dangerous thing to be selling? Like I said, when I left
the
supermarket the other
night. To be selling.
Yeah.
The woman with her high heel might
Wait a minute. What is this with you, Jose? Thanks. I got to let you go here. I'm protecting you from saying something that's one of your friends is going to say, hey, did you hear Jose on WICC the other day? Oh, my God. What the heck was up with him? All right. You may have heard the story yesterday into last night into today. There was a rather interesting revelation concerning the state's finances and how this was revealed. And a lot of people going, huh? Steve Harding joins us, Republican State Senate leader from Brookfield. Steve, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Good afternoon. How are you, Paul? It's always great to be on with you, and thank you for having me.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Well, you know, sometimes, Steve, like I said earlier in the show, we find that $5 bill, you know, wadded up in a jacket, you know, from a night at a bar, or we went to a wedding, and we were going to use it to tip the bartender, and then, oh, there's that $10 bill in the couch cushion. That's where it ended up. Well, we kind of had that happen, Steve, to the tune, and I guess it's better to be unexpected and find it, to be short, $340 million. Explain, Steve, what's going on here, because I know you and even lawmakers from both sides the other day were like, huh? Well, what's going on here?
Yeah. It was evidently spotted, they claim, I think a few weeks ago, and the treasurer's office was not transferring it over to the general fund. And then when the Office of Fiscal Analysis and the governor's office started crafting their budget the past few weeks, that's when, quote unquote, it was discovered and finally revealed to us over the past couple of days as legislators. So it speaks to, I don't know if I could say incompetence, but I mean, I'm hard pressed not to say it, frankly. When we're talking about $340 million that we could be expending or should have been accounted for, that just seemingly is popping into the budget proposal that the governor is going to be making in a few weeks, mm-hmm. and is finally being accounted for and addressed. This is not the first time where something surprising has come up in our budgets. I think it speaks to either a lack of attention on the part of those managing the budgets for the state of Connecticut, or other reasons for it that are beyond even my imagination.
I'm going to go to the other reason part of it, Steve, and you don't have to. Believe me, I'm not telling you to agree with me here, but was this money hidden on purpose? I mean, has that thought crossed people's minds? Because, look, we know the governor is surprisingly conservative on a lot of fiscal matters. I mean, how could they not know, Steve? You know where my mind's going here on this, right?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, look, you have to look at how certain things add up.
Yeah.
And sometimes things seem to be too good to be true or too coincidental. And I think that's kind of the category that I think many people that are raising speculation about why this was found when it was found are saying what they're saying is because certain things have added up here in terms of how this helps this current budget year, how it wasn't used previously or wasn't legislators weren't aware of it when they were trying to have discussions about the last budget that was done, which wasn't really a budget. We can get into that discussion on another day. We have in the past, Paul. Mm-hmm. You do have to wonder, frankly, why this was not revealed earlier and whether or not it was lack of paying attention or incompetence or negligence in the budgeting process and by those that manage the budget, or whether or not this was revealed many years after the fact, basically, as this was accruing interest.
Yeah.
In the big scheme of things, this is not even percentage based per capita, Paul.
Yeah.
This is not the $5 bill.
No.
As you mentioned, sitting in the jacket pocket.
Yeah.
This is a, you know, $100 or a few $100.
Yeah.
Sitting in your jacket pocket and go, how on earth did I forget about this?
Yeah.
Is what you would say to yourself when you saw it later on. This is not, oh, it's $5. Yeah, I probably forgot I left that in there.
Yeah.
This is a lot, a substantial amount of money, a certainly a percentage of our overall budget that essentially, to your point, was quote unquote wink wink nod nod sitting in a jacket pocket somewhere.
Yeah, and so Steve, as legislators now, you men and women on both sides of the aisle, I'm sure it's already happened. You must be deluged now, or will be over the next few days, with a lot of these, you know, social groups and self help groups and community groups saying, well, look at that. You said we couldn't get enough money because we had to stay within the guardrails. But look what happened. $340 million. I would imagine, and I don't blame them, Steve, financially, if I was looking for the money, I'd do it too. So I would imagine you guys and gals are going to get deluged with this over the next few weeks.
Yeah, so the money can get expended in this fiscal year. It gets quirky with the guardrails in terms of how it's calculated and how much can be spent. But the impact of this is interesting. It's interesting in a few methods. Mm-hmm. One is the fact that, you can potentially expend this in this fiscal year. There could be adjustments and recalculations made in this next year's budget that we're going to be adopting, this biannual budget, that would impact this fiscal year, and being able to spend a certain amount of this money and a significant portion of it in this fiscal year. So it's 100 and something plus million dollars that could be expended potentially in this fiscal year, mm-hmm. based upon certain calculations that are not what no one thought existed. That's number one. And number two, what I think is really important, what is wrong about this, frankly, Paul, is the fact that none of it is under the confines of the previous ARPA funding. So mm-hmm. the only reason we have this money is because we received this ARPA federal funding that had, as you know, very specific guidelines on how this was spent, where it could be spent, et cetera. Those guidelines, as I understand, are now gone. So even though we only accrued this money because of the ARPA funding, and it sat in an interest-bearing account or whatever the case may be, we, as a state government, can now expend that however we wish.
Mm.
So we use this ARPA money, got additional revenue from it from interest, and now we're allowed to spend it however we want, which could be antithetical to what ARPA funding was meant for. That's another additional problematic aspect of that. And it also, questions the lack of transparency, to say the very least, or the lack of competence involved in revealing this. This money, and it only leads to the suspicion of why we're currently in the position we're in today.
Interesting. Steve Harding of Brookfield, Republican State Senate leader. Steve, at least it's not a $340 million hole. Listen, if it's going to be $340, you want it in the black and not in the red, right?
That is true. We can at least agree on that, if nothing else. Well, you're exactly right.
Yeah, Steve, thanks. Take care. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you,
you
sir.
As well.
Yeah, there you go. Steve Harding, State Senate Republican leader, saying, look at this. And as I mentioned, full coverage of the oath of office and the inauguration this coming Monday right here of Trump 2.0, the second edition of the Trump presidency, and a gentleman who has done a great job watching the transition there in West Palm Beach, CBS News reporter Aaron Navarro. Aaron, good afternoon again. How are you, sir?
Doing good, Paul. How are you?
Doing well here, watching things from afar. You're way closer there. So we're coming around the home stretch here, Aaron. As far as the transition, we know the confirmation hearings are going on now. Along with that, any other buzz here? Is the transition, are you folks being told that it's moving along as the Trump team pretty much expected or not?
Well, we know that there actually has been a good amount of smoothness, if you will, between the outgoing administration and the incoming administration. We know that members of President Biden's cabinet met yesterday with nominated cabinet members from Trump, showing, a sort of a decorum that wasn't necessarily there on the exit of Trump's first term. But so far, yes, pretty smooth. In addition to the hearings we're seeing in Congress, a lot of just, undersecretary, assistant administrator roles that Trump is announcing on his platform, Truth Social, as he looks to round out the rest of his administration.
Yeah, when that happens, Aaron, I mean, obviously, you know this, and people like you and me who have to geek out on this, but these are from people, these lists were compiled probably before the election, right? And I'm sure Mr. Trump has a final say on this, but as you say, when you get to those undersecretaries and assistant secretaries, those are a lot of the people where the heavy lifting has already been done here, right, for him?
That's right, and that's kind of why you saw the main cabinet members announced first. I remember he did a lot of it right before Thanksgiving week last year. So it's kind of just, crossing the T's and such with the rest of his, announcements in terms of his staff.
Aaron Navarro here. A couple more questions with Aaron as he's watching the Trump transition. Are they confident, Aaron? What are they telling you on and off the record, on background maybe, about Pete Hegseth? What are you hearing there? And I guess also the other two that they may have problems with, Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. What's the buzz you're hearing on those?
Well, it seems like the Trump team is pleased so far with Hegseth's, cabinet hearing. We're starting to see more Republican senators, such as Joni Ernst of Iowa, a former veteran herself, say that she will vote to confirm Hegseth. Her support was potentially in question before, given some of the allegations for him. But they seem pretty optimistic. They're obviously going to be watching and seeing what happens with RFK Jr. and Tulsi Gabbard. But so far, so good for them. Even just, some of the lesser controversial members that they have today, Scott Bessent, they've really been elevating some of his clips online, showing that they're, pleased with how it's going.
Final question for you, Aaron. Is there one thing that we may want to watch here heading into tomorrow and the weekend here? Or is all the heavy lifting pretty much done here? There won't be any weekend surprises. Would there be or not? What do you think?
Oh, don't jinx us, Paul. We'll see. we know that, one thing that's been popping up is Trump and this TikTok ban that's scheduled, I believe, to take place this Sunday.
Yeah.
Trump has seemed to indicate support for some sort of action once he gets in the office, could maybe suspend that ban, according to reports. We'll see what ends up happening. He supports, the U.S. owning that app in some way, but I think he knows and his team knows it's kind of up to TikTok right now.
Excellent. Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, thank you. Travel safely. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Aaron Navarro, CBS News. So there it is. Welcoming back to the phone lines here, a frequent guest of us. We've had her on a few times before. Cheryl Chumley is the guest. She is the online opinion editor of the Washington Times, and her new book is called God Given Her Bus, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths. Cheryl, it's Paul here in the People's Republic of Connecticut. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
So before we get to your editorial about executive orders, which is something I always mention, which drives me up a wall, talk about your new book here, which I see is available on Amazon and other outlets. What is God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths all about?
Yeah, it's about the war in America. It just came out this week, and, it's been something that's been on my mind for years and years now. We're very good about getting involved in the political battles and the cultural battles and the education battles and even foreign policy battles. But we forget sometimes that the big war in America is to retain the concept of God-given individual liberties and rights, right? That is actually the entire war that we fight for here. And if we don't remember that, what's going to happen is we're going to get so dragged down in political battles that every 4 years, every 2 years, every election season, we're going to wear ourselves out trying to get the right candidate in office with R next to his or her name, only to be disappointed and only to lose ever more of our individual rights. So God-given or bust, it's God-given or bust time in America. Let's recapture God-given individual rights and make sure our political leaders not only recognize those, but also uphold them.
Which Cheryl, before we get to your editorial here, you say, people say, well, there she is, another right winger. But what you said applies to every side, to every political faction or every political voice, that no matter who you are, no matter what you think, you do have these rights that no men or women can strip from you.
Absolutely. This is not about Bible thumping, right? Because I used to be an atheist. I'm not anymore. Mm. But even when I was an atheist, I recognized the beauty and genius of founding fathers' concept of American exceptionalism, which they put forth in the Declaration of Independence, sort of our marching orders. We hold these truths to be self-evident, right? That all men are created equal, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain rights, and that governments are only implemented in order to preserve and protect those natural-born inherent rights from God. So you don't even have to be a believer to recognize the genius and the importance of keeping intact God-given individual liberties, because the opposite of that is government-granted. And maybe you have somebody in office that you are aligned with politically, and you're okay with taking your rights and liberties from that person. But just remember, the political winds shift, and soon enough there will be some somebody in office that you're not so in agreement with, and that's when all of a sudden the importance of God-given rights and liberties shines clear.
Cheryl Chumley is the guest. Check out her pieces at the Washington Times, WashingtonTimes.com. Cheryl, you have something here that hits a home run with me. Executive orders are blowing up the Constitution, and it really frosts me off, Cheryl. The only thing you really see Congress, both sides, getting together on, usually, and only because there's a rhetorical gun to their heads, are budget bills here. Everything else, a lot of stuff to do with Title IX and especially immigration and the heavy lifting stuff is continuously done by executive order. And that's not good. It's just not.
And they barely even do their budgetary duties anymore, right? Every time budget season comes around, they do continuing resolutions and they extend deadlines and so forth. So they can't even get that basic core function of their congressional offices done properly. I hate executive orders. Mm. I detest them. And I don't care whether it's a Democrat or Republican.
Yeah.
In the White House, I just think that they are totally contrary to our Constitution. And it's an excellent example of why, as citizens in America, if we hold fast to the truth of God-given individual liberties and rights, you can see the evil anti-Americanism of executive orders. The White House office is not a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a king. And even though Donald Trump is going to use his executive orders to unwind the unconstitutional governance of Joe Biden and Joe Biden's unconstitutional executive orders, where does it stop? Sooner or later, we have to dig down deep and fight for the actual principle, which is putting Congress back in charge of making our laws and holding them accountable to the people.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, if people think Congress screwed up, listen, you file a federal lawsuit against the law or a constitutional argument, and it makes its way up the chain to the Supreme Court. So, Cheryl, I'm 100% on board with you on this. And is the problem with executive orders partly born from the filibuster in the Senate, where the sides are so polarized, Cheryl, that it's almost impossible, not quite impossible, but it's almost impossible on either side, when either side is in power, to get past the filibuster, which in principle I'm okay with, but I think it's used way too much.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a case for that, right? But really the root of it is the cowardice of our political leaders.
Yeah.
If our legislators did what they swore to the Constitution to do, to represent the people and the Constitution in office, they would take those duties and responsibilities seriously, and they would actually stick with making laws and passing legislation,
mm-hmm.
and they would work with the other side on behalf of the American citizens. But the problem is we have gotten an arrogant political class and a cowardly political class. They're more interested in preserving their own political seats than they are working for the citizens of America.
Yeah, and Cheryl, I've talked to several past and present congressional people here in Connecticut, and I'm sure you have over your years in the D.C. area. And I don't know about you, but they have told me on the record here and even off the record, they say, well, yeah, there is a good amount of agreement on this, but I'm going to get pummeled with a primary if I vote yes or no on this. I mean, you're right. Sadly, it's about, I can't really vote what I think here, because then I might lose. Well, it's too bad. You lose, isn't it? Doesn't that come with the territory, or maybe not?
It absolutely. That is self-interest right there, right? And that's a form of pride, which goes back to the moral compass of God-given or bust, right? We need political leaders who actually recognize their true role as service to the American people. They are public servants, and they're supposed to be humble public servants. They're not supposed to be arrogant, elitist public servants. And that's the problem now. Too many of them go to Capitol Hill. They get in their bubbles. They think they're smarter than the average citizen there. And then they go out there and they legislate things that really work toward enhancing their political power and their political seats and against advancing the individual rights and liberties of the American people.
Cheryl Chumley is the guest, the online editor, the online commentary section of the Washington Times. Hey, Cheryl, finally, what are you hearing through your contacts at the Times and across the aisle and everybody else about what we may see in the first weeks, months, maybe the first year of the Trump presidency. Is there going to be the standard freak out here come noontime on Monday, or a lot of people are just going to sit and watch? What do you think?
Well, don't Democrats always freak out, right? That's their voting base, okay? Mm. They're heavily medicated, and of course, they're going to freak out. But look, just look at Trump's official inauguration photo, right? Look at the determination
I
in this
that.
Man's face.
It looks like Cheryl, it's his mugshot all over again. I don't think he's hiding it.
No, not at all. And so the fact that he is out in the open about it, and then you look at the people he is surrounding himself with this time, this incoming president is coming into the White House with determination to unwind much of what went forth under the Joe Biden administration and to bring about some transparency and accountability that has long gone by the wayside in federal politics.
Will they go after him again?
Of course. Don't you think? That's just, look, we have to expect that. We have to expect if it's not Russia collusion, it's going to be something else, right? I mean, we really do have to expect that. But, you know, you've got some good people, the Justice Department this time. You've got some good people with border control this time. You've got some good people in Donald Trump's administration that really aren't going to be afraid to make the fight. They're not going to be shy, and they're not going to try and work with the other side in a cooperative manner. They're going to come out with you know, guns blazing, figuratively speaking.
Yeah. The name of the book, God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths. The website, CherylChumley.com, CherylChumley.com. And she is also the online opinion editor at The Washington Times. Cheryl, good to hear from you. We'll talk in a few months. Thank you, ma'am.
Can't wait. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Cheryl Chumley there. Agree, disagree? What do you think? She's always a provocative opinion leader. Love having her on. Right here on WICC.